Yes Life Show on UK Health Radio. My name's Robin Daly and I'm the regular host for the show, as well as founder of the UK charity Yes to Life that supports those with cancer in learning about and using integrative medicine to help their recovery. My guest on the show this week is the ever-popular Joe Gamble, always a ready source of no-nonsense advice on lifestyle medicine to support cancer treatment. This time I'm talking to Joe about the need for personalisation in cancer care and how important this can be to a successful outcome. I'm speaking to Joe over the internet at her practice in Coventry. Morning Joe, great to see you again.
Good morning Robin.
Lovely. So today we're talking about individualised approaches to supporting someone through cancer. So I want to talk about personalisation, why it's important for getting good results in cancer care. With the rise of evidence-based medicine, public health care has broadly moved relentlessly in the direction of one-size-fits-all medicine. Now, for some things, this can actually work quite well. It's enabled us to get astonishingly consistent results with things like heart bypass operations. But for the complexities of a chronic disease like cancer, it's quite another story. Can you start out by making the case for personalisation? Why would you say is it so important to the success of a treatment programme?
Okay, so I'm going to start off by saying, me personally, and I'm sure there's practitioners out there, maybe other functional medicine practitioners that have, but me personally, in 15 years of specialising in oncology, have never worked with identical twins with the same type of cancer. Okay. I've worked with identical twins with other the same, like two identical twins with rheumatoid arthritis, but never with cancer. So what does that mean? It means that we are all unique, whether that is right down deep into the roots of the individual and looking at their genetic individuality, whether that is then looking at their lifestyle, things like their exposure to stress, their exposure to antibiotic therapy, their exposure to pesticides, exhaust fumes, all the things that add to our toxic burden. So therefore, if we are all so unique, why are we thinking that one size fits all is going to be okay when we know that so many of these factors I've just mentioned and many more are drivers of cancer and influential on outcome from cancer?
Fair enough. Okay, well, look, I mentioned one size fits all, and there does seem to be one integrative approach that almost does this, which is exercise. Mm-hmm. It seems to be like benefits almost anybody if they can move. You know? But is there anything else that comes near to that in a
one size fits all approach?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, from our point of view, rainbow of colour in a diet. So we all need to be eating that rainbow of colour foods that are reds, oranges, yellows, greens, blues and purples, whites and tans. Now, whether this is to focus on prevention or whether this is to focus on support to an individual who has a diagnosis. But I could argue the benefits of these for cancer, for cardiovascular disease, for eye health, for brain health. So actually, we would all benefit from every day trying to get a minimum of one, ideally two, from every colour of the rainbow. There you go. There's another one size pretty much fits all.
That's pretty good. Yeah, okay. Great. So you mentioned quite a few of the kind of personal factors that can affect a treatment outcome or indeed the progress of a cancer. And one of the things you mentioned, which is kind of one of the most obvious in this day and age, is our genes. Everybody's talking about those all the time. This is the new kid on the block in terms of information we have about who we are and why we respond to the world in a particular way. So what effects can our genetic profile have, and how important is it to know about our genes?
Yeah. Okay. So great question. We are all genetically, unless we are an identical twin, we are genetically unique. And I'm going to give you a few examples. So through the Human Genome Project, we've understood so much more about genetic stability and instability. And we have managed to, the royal we, obviously, I wasn't involved in the genetic project, but they have managed to highlight many genomes involved in different processes within our body. So for example, CYP1B1 is a gene pathway involved in the metabolism of estrogen. If that pathway in you is altered, your ability to clear the more aggressive estrogen from your body is inhibited, and therefore you are more likely to get a bigger pool of that more aggressive estrogen, which could be a driver of breast cancer, ovarian cancer, prostate cancer, estrogen dominant cancers. There's one example. M1, GSTP1 are both involved in the synthesis of glutathione. Now, glutathione is our body's major detoxification agent. So we come into contact with exhaust fumes, which who's not going to come into contact with exhaust fumes, secondhand cigarette smoke. You know, we don't have to have these toxins ourselves. This is just everyday living. But let's take that even further. We've got amalgam fillings. We need glutathione to bind to the mercury to support detoxification processes. So if we've got reduced functionality of those glutathione processes, we are less good at detoxifying. Now, I fall into that category myself. And before I fully understood about genomics about, 15 years ago, I remember every time I used to get on a plane, I would get a headache. And I always used to think maybe it's stress. You know what it's like when you're going on holiday. And then when I did my functional medicine training and my fellowship in integrative oncology, like I was flying every sort of 4 weeks over to the States. That was a lot of headaches. And I realized it was as they were fueling the plane up, that's when the headache would turn on. And it's because of my reduced ability to clear the toxins. And you get this massive hit of diesel coming through the plane. Whereas now what I do, well, now I don't fly anymore because of COVID's grounded me. But what I then started to do was take a big dose of glutathione before I got on the plane. Gone. Same with fueling up my car, putting diesel in my car. It makes me feel really nauseous, and that's what it is. So the outcome to that, Robin, is I just don't fuel my own car up, and then that dealt with that problem.
Right.
So there's another example. Now let's take this even more personalized. And I'm going to stick with breast cancer at this point. CYP2D6. Now there are multiple polymorphisms, abnormalities on this 2D6 pathway, but just for the ease of today, we'll refer to it as CYP2D6. It's involved in the metabolism of many pharmaceutical medications. Tamoxifen is one of those medications processed down that 2D6 pathway. Now, if you as an individual have a speeded up clearance of that pathway and you're taking a drug, so you're taking tamoxifen because you've got breast cancer and you're in your kind of 5 or 10 years post breast cancer, then, and you're speeding the clearance of that drug through the liver, is it going to be effective for the 24 hours from one dose to the next? And the answer to that is no, not likely. But yet, what medical doctor is testing 2D6 polymorphisms on patients before they prescribe tamoxifen? No. No medical doctor is. But yet everybody that comes to me on or suggestive to go on tamoxifen, I test them. And if they are a speed clearer, I refer them back to their oncologist. But is this the reason why so many women are relapsing on tamoxifen? Because actually it's not as effective as the doctors think it is because it's being cleared from their body too quickly. That is an example of personalized medicine.
Okay, so the answer to the second part of my question is about how important do you think it might be to know about your genes, I imagine, is pretty important.
Really important, Robin. And there is a bit of an ethical thing around this. So things like the APOE gene, which is the gene that has been associated with, so if you're APOE 3, 4 or 4, 4, you have a greater incidence of Alzheimer's disease. And some people could argue they don't want to know that. So that's where we can fall into sort of ethics. Is it a good idea to know? Is it not a good idea to know? Do people want to know? You could take that even further. Could that affect your life insurance, etc., etc.? But right, where I stand, the more information that we have on us as an individual, no, we can't change the genes, not at the moment. Although I will say my older daughter is doing a degree in biochemistry and one of her modules for next year is changing gene expression. So I'm thinking I might dress up as like a 20-year-old and go and sit in the back of those lectures. I'm sure they won't realise that, you know, actually I'm double that age. So wait for the next generation. She's going to be the next generation of gene expression. But in our generation, at the moment, we can't change the genome, but what we can do is change the environment you bathe that genome in. And that's what we want to be thinking about. So, yes, in my opinion, the more that we know, the more that we can support the individual. And it isn't just about tamoxifen or detoxification. It goes so much deeper than that. For example, BCMO1 is the gene involved in converting beta carotenoid. So that's what we get from our orange vegetables. So carrots, butternut squash, sweet potato, to retinol, which is vitamin A. So, you know, when you were a kid and you got told if you eat your carrots, you'll see you dark. Now, that is only true if you don't have a polymorphism on your BCMO1, because it's actually retinol that allows you a good eyesight. So for so many of us, we're eating our orange vegetables. And don't get me wrong, carotenoids have got other benefits, but actually they're not converting to retinol. Now, retinol is really only available through like organ meat or supplementation. So if you fall into that category and you don't eat organ meat, as many of us don't eat organ meat, then actually, do you need to be supplementing with retinol as a supplement? How do you know that, Robin? Well, no, maybe you know, I can't see in the dark, so maybe I think I do need to take this. But you wouldn't know that looking in the mirror. I couldn't know that doing a physical examination on you. And that's the sort of thing that understanding gene and gene expression gives you, that ability to make changes.
Absolutely. Interesting. Well, that's the key point, really, in a way. If you're told a piece of information about the likelihood of getting Alzheimer's and along with the fact there's nothing you can do about it, then it's quite reasonable that you might not want to know about it.
Yep.
But if you're told you're likely to get it and there are things you can do to prevent it, it's completely different and you want to know about it because let's get going with the prevention now.
Yep, I agree.
So, you know, that's, I think, the difference in that. The other thing about your data becoming, you know, the property of some corporation, there's not actually a duty to disclose the results of a test like that, is there? No. Right, so people shouldn't worry about it.
I think some people worry with some companies. So, like, 23andMe is owned by Google, and therefore, where can this data go? But certainly the companies that I predominantly use don't disclose your data and have no obligation to, and you have no obligation to share that.
Right. Okay. Well, that's good to hear. So that's looking at one end of the story, if you like, our genetics, how we start off life and our kind of, a basic set of genes. But at the other end, then there's what's actually happening in day-to-day life, which is affected by a massive number of things you said. Can we talk about some of those now? And maybe you want to identify the most important functions that could affect our treatment outcomes and that need to be accounted for, absorption or something like that.
Yep. So I'm going to start off with stress. Stress is something, and you know, if we're saying somebody's had a disease diagnosis, are they not going to be stressed? But actually, even before we get to that point, honestly, who isn't stressed in today's living? I mean, we're, you know, as we speak, as we are doing this recording, we are at, there's a war going on in the world. Mm-hmm. We're still coming out the other side of the COVID pandemic. Financially, we're just about to hit a recession. You know, gas and electricity prices are the highest that they've ever been. Fuel's the highest that it's ever been. Food's the highest. You know, who hasn't got some elements of stress in their day-to-day living? Now, stress has massive impacts on our bodily functions. So you just mentioned digestion. Stress affects digestive processes. We'll talk a bit more about digestion in a minute. Stress affects our ability to regulate inflammation. We're inflamed. We get more cell damage, referred to as oxidation. oxidation then drives more inflammation and more stress. So we fall into these vicious catch-22 cycles. So actually, one other thing when you said to me, what else can one size fit all? And what we do with this doesn't one size fit all. But honestly, I'm yet to meet anybody that doesn't need some lifestyle medicine around stress, resilience, and support. And I think me and you could both agree that we fall into that category. So, you know, if anybody wants to say to me, Joe, I'm under no stress, and maybe I'm going to find them on a desert island where they've got no Wi-Fi, no connectivity, and their food is all provided for them, then maybe that person does exist. But, you know, in our country, in this sort of time in the life, that isn't going to happen. So stress is a massive one. Digestion. When we think about the gut ecosystem, the job of the gut ecosystem is to regulate our immune systems within our body. It helps to regulate inflammation. It also helps to regulate things like our happy hormones. Now, the amount of challenge to that gut ecosystem is far greater today than again it was a couple of hundred years ago. And some of that does come down to modern medicine, like the use of antibiotics. And don't get me wrong, antibiotics can save lives. And not so much now, I have to say, doctors have changed, but certainly in my childhood, I have very many memories of banana medicine and it being given out very easily. So overuse of antibiotics, vaccinations. And again, I'm not here today to have a debate about vaccinations and should we have one, should we not? But we know that with vaccinations come stabilizers. So for example, aluminium. So we're putting challenges on our body, whether it's our gut or our detoxification system, to be able to handle these.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip, because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So we start to change. Stress itself changes this ecosystem. The type of food that we're eating changes this ecosystem. And a typical Western diet that's very high in refined carbohydrates, very high in sugars, alters the ecosystem to how a diet where we used to go and pick our food from the land and it was all locally produced and it wasn't sprayed. You can imagine that it is going to cause an imbalance in this ecosystem. So thus, our ability to regulate immunity and inflammation and produce our happy hormones is going to be altered. So that is a massive factor when we're thinking about why does somebody get disease in the first instance. And this is why so often I start by testing their gut and their gut microbiome to see what that ecosystem looks like. Right. So stress, gut, sleep is going to be another one. There's this like equation, Robin, where people go to bed and they're in bed for 6 hours, but yet they're expecting to get 8 hours sleep from that 6 hours in their bedroom. Right. And it has yet to defy me how you can make that possible. We all need 8 hours sleep, and it's not a luxury. It's actually a requirement for our bodies to repair, our immune systems to be able to respond to invaders, our liver to be able to detoxify. And yet so many people are getting into bed with their mobile phones, checking in on Facebook, watching TV in bed. They're not in bed long enough. People's emails binging in next to their heads and it's bringing them out of their sleep. So sleep is another thing that we absolutely need to be thinking about and focusing on.
Mm-hmm. And what about our ability to deal with the hormones? You already described how we might be genetically disposed to be not very good at that, mm-hmm. but there are lots of other factors that play into this, aren't there?
Yeah, absolutely. So genetics is one. Exposure is another massive one. There is an absolute reason why youngsters are going through puberty so much earlier now than even 30, 40 years ago. So we used to see when I was at school, the average age of my peers starting their periods was sort of between 12 and 15. And now that's more like 9 to 12. And that's in one clear generation. Why? Because we are being exposed to more hormones, whether that's through the food supply. So the hormones in cows and in chicken and thus their products, the milk and the eggs, and whether that is endocrine mimicking agents. So this is plastics. This is things that are added to our shampoos and our conditioners and our face creams and our deodorants and everything else. These endocrine mimicking agents. So let's just take BPA, for example. Most people have heard of BPA. BPA is banned in children's bottles, so babies' bottles. And in some countries, it is banned completely. But yet we are being exposed to massive amounts of BPA through people drinking from plastic water bottles. We're all told to drink more. So people are grabbing their bottle of Evian water and drinking from it. The worst thing that you can do is refill an old plastic water bottle. So you're constantly releasing BPA into it. I always advise we go for a stainless steel one. But look at how much our food is wrapped in plastic. So you've only got to walk into, let's go, a Marks and Spencer's food hall, and everything is wrapped in plastic. Now, the higher the fat of the food, so things like cheese, if you wrap that in cling film, the fat will absorb the BPA even more. So I do appreciate it's almost impossible to get away from all plastics. But this is why me personally, I shop at like Abel and Cole for my veggies, because nothing crucifies me more than buying an organic broccoli or an organic cucumber and it being shrink wrapped in plastic. So it's why I get most of my things delivered in boxes and they come in like paper bags and, you know, just still got the mud attached to the bottom of them. So there are things that we can do to minimize. If you go and open my fridge, there's still plastic in it, but it's the minority, not the majority. So these are some of the reasons why we're seeing so much hormonal dysregulation. So if you've got a child that's now starting, a girl that's starting her periods at 9 rather than 13, she is being exposed so much earlier. So therefore, what is her lifetime exposure going to be like? And then guess what? 33, she presents with a breast cancer.
One of the most worrying things I heard recently was that, people obviously who are aware of this are trying to avoid BPA. But unfortunately, there's a lot of products that say BPA free and they've replaced the BPA with something which is even less well known, less tested and potentially worse.
Yeah, which is why not drinking from plastic, even if it says BPA. And, you know, I've got a baby myself, Robin, and actually, to be fair, she's exclusively breastfed, but she does have some express milk in bottles. We only use glass bottles. There is no plastic bottle on this nation I would be happy to put up to my baby's mouth.
Right. Interesting. Okay. So some of the personalization we've been speaking about is to get the body's basic systems working properly. So that's if they're not working properly, you've got to get them working properly. I'm guessing these are top priority in a way, the kind of things that would be considered part of a prehabilitation process, to use a current word, in terms of a cancer patient. Do you want to say a little bit about that?
So if you think about, I mean, we've got lots of systems in our body, our cardiovascular system. That isn't generally my top priority in a cancer individual. Generally, what my top priorities are our digestive system, our detoxification system, so our livers. In an endocrine cancer, so breast cancer, ovarian, endometrial, prostate, our endocrine system. We also want to be thinking about in amongst all of this, like our nervous system, because that will have an impact on all of the above. And nervous systems are going to knock out lots of these different systems in our body. So for anybody, even if that individual can't afford to do any testing to find out what is out of balance, but don't forget, we can get, you know, blood work done through the GPs. So if you're listening, you're like, I can't afford private testing to find out what my gut ecosystem looks like. We can get basics done through your GPs, liver function tests. We can look at your ratios in your white blood cells, to look at your neutrophil to lymphocyte to platelet ratios look like. Generally, we can get things like vitamin D done through the doctors. But what all of us would benefit from is support of each of these systems. And whether that comes through food, so things like detoxification, so eating more culinary herbs, so coriander, basil, chives, adding more of these to food to support detoxification, using herbal teas, things like nettle, green tea, again, to support detoxification processes. Gut ecosystem. I mean, these are very general pieces of information. We've got to be careful that, you know, I'm going to say gut prebiotics, that's onions, garlic, leeks, potentially probiotics. But I'm saying this potentially because if you are neutropenic, you're on active cancer treatment, probiotic rich foods might not be suitable for you. So this is where we need to make sure we are focusing on that individualized, not one size fits all. But they are beginning process of supporting those systems. Digestion, you mentioned digestion, absorption. The more we incorporate things like bitter leaves, things like watercress, rocket, the more it stimulates our salivary processes, our pancreas to produce more digestive enzymes so that we get more bang from our buck from the foods that we eat. So actually getting all of these systems working to the best possible for you, the individual, bearing in mind if you're having chemotherapy, you're never going to have a perfect working liver because you're bombarding it. But if we can still get you to the best you that we can get you, then we are allowing you to cope with the treatment that you're on. And if you're post-treatment, allowing you to be able to, as much as possible, regain homeostasis within the body, which just means optimal balance.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so courses of implementation would be aimed at actually preparing the individual to cope with harsh treatments.
Absolutely.
So the timetable for that's presumably largely dictated by the treatment schedule. And yeah. Do you want to say a bit about the kind of ways, the things people should be thinking about?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. And you know, the ideal scenario, I mean, ideally, we're not diagnosed with cancer, but ideally, when somebody is diagnosed with cancer, getting them to functional medicine, individualized medicine as soon as possible. And I regularly see this. People have literally just been diagnosed and we've got maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks before treatment begins, right, depending on what that looks like. Now, it does depend on whether they're going through chemotherapy, radiotherapy, surgery first, and you know, it just depends on the individual and the individual types of cancer. But this preparation falls into two categories, body preparation and mind preparation. So body preparation is not that too dissimilar to what we've already talked about, gut, liver, sleep, stress, like getting all of these into the best possible position, making changes to the diet, trying to get out the refined carbohydrates or whites, swap them for complex carbohydrates, really trying to make sure we've got an optimal balance of proteins, carbohydrates, fats, and fiber, unless you've got an impacted colon. And then again, you are different in that circumstance. If you've got a bowel tumor impacting your colon, please don't rev up your fiber because you are more likely to have a perforation. So the more we can prepare your body on a physical level, the absolute better you are going to go into it. Mm. But actually what I want to focus on is the other side to it, the mind side to it. And stress falls into this mind side to it, but so does you being as in control of your journey as absolutely possible. Now, somebody goes into, and I think in most hospitals, but still not all, you are now starting to be able to take one person into the room with you, but not all hospitals are allowing another person because of COVID. Right. So you go into this room, you're on your own, and yes, there might be, you know, a lovely nurse there, the consultant, you might have somebody from Macmillan, and they're telling you that you've got a diagnosis of cancer. And the most likely thing is, first of all, fear of your mortality, but your feeling of being out of control. So you go on to a bit of a conveyor belt. So you've got your diagnosis. Now you need to go through, well, we've got to have more scans, make sure it's not metastasized. And you've got to see a surgeon, and you've got to see somebody who's going to do the radiotherapy. And we're doing all this bloods to prepare you for chemotherapy. And you're like, whoa, and I have no control over this journey whatsoever. Right. But by actually incorporating functional medicine into your journey, that gives you some of the control that you've lost, because you are now in a position that you are taking an element of control in what feels like a completely out of control world. And in doing so, that allows you, the individual, to actually be able to take away some of that fear. And we're never going to take away that fear of your mortality, because there's something about being diagnosed with cancer that makes everybody think about that. But we are able to be able to make informed choices, be able to make changes to your diet, your lifestyle, be able to incorporate the right supplements for you. And actually then that changes everything. Because you are in a position of control, and you can make choices, and you can be proactive, which sadly that stream has an element of taking all of that away from you, Robin. And we're not saying like functional medicine is not an alternative. It is alongside your conventional treatment. And under no circumstances am I saying don't do that. What I'm saying is you can do this as well. Mm. And then you are using functional medicine to improve the efficacy of your treatments. There's PubMed studies out there on many of our interventions improving efficacy. You're using it to minimize side effects. And most importantly, you're using it to change the environment within your body from one where cancer was in it thriving to one that you're making it more hostile. And actually, I should say, and even more importantly than that, you are regaining some of your control.
Mm-hmm. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip, because nothing's better.
The station that makes you feel good.
So the whole process you're going through is a bit like getting ready for a marathon, it sounds to me. It's like you, yep, if you're getting prepared for a marathon, you do a lot of the things that you've actually described. But yeah, I really take it on the mental side of having things in place to support you and to give you some degree of choice and control, extremely important. And yeah, that whole period where we weren't able to take somebody into a consultation with us, a bit of a disaster really, because it's
horrendous. It's, can you imagine? Yeah. And okay, it might not have been your original diagnosis, but it might have been the scan that they reported that they'd found nodules in your liver.
Right.
and they're talking at you, and your brain is just like, oh my God, this means I'm going to die. Yeah. And then they're trying to go, right, now you've got to do this, and this. And I mean, people aren't able to take process that.
Not at all. I'm kind of interested, you're specially trained in supporting people with cancer. Do you have to become a bit of an expert on the side effect profiles of a whole load of drugs?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. In short, yes. So I'm sure most of your listeners have heard of Jane McKellen's and her Metro Maps to work on blocking pathways. So my qualification is I have, as well as being a nutritional therapist and a functional medicine practitioner and a herbalist, I'm also have a fellowship in integrative oncology. Mm. So I trained over in America, and in America, they're a little bit more forward thinking on integrative oncology, part to do with the insurance model over that. Right. You know, you can walk through the door, claim back your money for your oncologist, claim back your money for your functional medicine integrative oncologist. A lot of the work that I did as part of my fellowship in integrative oncology was looking at how drugs worked on the body, looking at the mode of action of each of those drugs, looking at how drugs interact with each other, mm-hmm. and why they put this drug together with this drug to get the better efficacy. And then looking at how we can work to look at the behavior of a tumor and then work on how to block some of those pathways involved in feeding that tumor, whether that be like the glucose pathway or the glutamine pathway or the fatty acid pathway. We can go way deeper than that and look at the inflammatory burdens and what we can do to try and block each of those pathways. There's an element of science and there's an element of art to that. Mm-hmm. And it's pulling together both of those elements and looking at each individual in each tumor. You know, it's not, you can't even go breast cancer. There's so many different breakdowns within that breast cancer, and those tumors behave in a different way.
Right. So there's a lot to know, basically, if you want to be as effective as possible in helping somebody who's got cancer.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes. And you know what? It's an area we never stop learning about. Like, a big part of what I go away and do research on nowadays is like immunotherapy and how immunotherapy, because immunotherapy has come quite a long way it's come a long way in the last sort of 5 to 10 years. Mm. So even since I finished my fellowship, you can't be like, right, done, because things are changing.
Right.
Things are constantly changing. Now, chemotherapies aren't really changing. You know, no. Most chemotherapies are really quite old. But what is changing is more like the immunotherapies. So really understanding how they work has to be part of my continual development, because if not, I can't support clients coming to me with that next level of drug.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes absolute sense. Okay, so supporting recovery is another aim of lifestyle medicine, both the short-term recovery from individual rounds of treatment and the ultimate goal of long-term recovery. So how much personalisation goes into this area?
Absolutely loads. So what I would say is somebody finishes their treatment, chemo, radio, surgery, whatever it is that comes last, somebody finishes their treatment. And typically on the NHS, let's take breast cancer, for example. So you've had chemotherapy to shrink the tumour, then you've had a mastectomy, then you've had radiotherapy, and then you fall into an annual mammogram. So that annual mammogram, so that's 12 whole months. That's a lot of days from one mammogram to another mammogram. And that is the level of follow-up care that you receive. You might go and see your breast care nurse, but they just encourage you to do self-examination. So if you've had a mastectomy, obviously you're self-examining the other breast. But I mean, don't forget, you could have had a mastectomy and reconstruction. You also need to be examining your armpit of that good that breast that you've had surgery on. So that's sort of the follow-up care that you receive from the NHS for breast cancer. But what I always say is, Robin, why did that happen to you in the first instance? Was that because you have a 1B1 polymorphism and you have excessive levels of 4-hydroxyestrogen, which is a more aggressive form of estrogen, possibly? Is that because too much stress has stolen the precursor pregnenolone. And pregnenolone, as well as making stress, also makes progesterone. So you knocked out your progesterone to estrogen balance, making you estrogen dominant, potentially. Is that because your gut microbiome is out of balance and therefore you couldn't regulate your immune system? Potentially. Is that because your melatonin levels are low and you don't have melatonin, which doesn't just regulate sleep, it also is a tumor surveillance agent. Mm. So you don't have enough melatonin to work as a tumor surveillance agent, potentially. Mm. The list can go on and on and on. So what? You leave all of those things out of balance because you didn't know that they were out of balance in the first instance. And you just rely on your annual mammogram to what? Pick up the next tumor? I mean, that's not preventative medicine that the NHS, you've already had cancer. So they're just like, yep, okay, carry on. Now, okay, this breast cancer lady might be on tamoxifen, but she might also have a 2D6 polymorphism, meaning that she's speed clearing tamoxifen from her. So to me, the journey actually begins when you finish your treatment to really focus on preventative medicine, prevention of a relapse of that cancer, or heaven forbid, prevention of a different type of cancer. I have more than one client on my caseload with three different types of cancer in their body simultaneously. Wow. So therefore, what does that tell you when you can get three different types of cancer? That your body is out of balance. The terrain is wrong. So if you don't do anything to change the terrain, guess what's going to happen? It's going to come back either there or somewhere else in your body. So actually, huge part of functional medicine, when their treatment ends, as begins. And again, I'm going to take you back to the mind. There's ends. And actually, there is comfort in people's diaries being full of appointments. So I've got my radio every day for 3 weeks. So my diary has that in. I've got my chemotherapy every 3 weeks. 3 days before I go in for my blood test. Then I see the nurse. Then I see there's comfort in that, Robin. And then this all comes to an end and people go, and they just hold their breath. They hold their breath in fear that it's going to come back because the comfort of the appointments has come to an end. Mm. Whereas actually what we want to do is take away the fear and replace it with proactivity.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we're just about to end, but I'm guessing from everything you've been saying that a functional medicine practitioner or a nutritional therapist specialised in cancer support is the best placed person to establish the type of personalisation that's required by an individual and to make recommendations. So how much of a trick do you think someone is missing by not having one of these on board?
I would say ideally it should be for everyone. But I would also say, Robin, some people don't want to make changes. Some people don't. Now, I'm pretty sure if people are listening to today's podcast, they're not that person. Right. But some people want to leave chemotherapy and go to McDonald's afterwards. Some people are like, I'm not interested in anything else. But we'll put those into the minority. And like I said, I doubt they're listening to today's podcast. I expect anybody who's listening to today's podcast is going to reflect on what we've talked about and said, whatever part of their journey they are, they've just been diagnosed, they've just finished treatment, or do you know what? They finished their treatment 5 years ago, but they're still in fear of relapse. Then actually functional medicine is for everybody because we need to see it. I use this analogy so often. Most people service their car on an annual basis, but yet we change our car every, 3 to 10 years. We get rid of it. If it goes to the scrappy, it's not the end of the world. They are replaceable. They are replaceable bodies. But our body is meant to last us through our lifetime, but yet people don't service it. People expect it to keep performing, but without putting that level of support into it. So actually, see functional medicine as servicing your car and highlighting where your imbalances are and then giving you a plan of action to put your car on the road with a reassurance that it is safe. It's safe to carry you, your families, your loved ones, and it is not going to break down tomorrow.
Okay. There we go. That's a strong message. So we're going to end there. Thanks very much. As usual, you're talking with absolute passion about this area, which clearly you've helped a massive number of people with and continue to do so. And your educational work is obviously enormously important as well, teaching this stuff to others.
Thanks, Robin.
All right.
Take care.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Well, I think Joe did a pretty convincing sell for the need for personalisation and for getting a functional medicine practitioner or nutritional therapist to provide help with that. If you'd like to hear more from Joe or any of my other expert guests, remember there's a massive back catalogue of more than 350 shows which is searchable. Just go to our website, that's yestolife.org.uk, click the link to the Yes to Life show that's on the homepage, and there you can search by guest, by topic, or by keyword. Thanks so much for joining me today. Please listen again next week when I'll be back with another guest expert and another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.